once again for tuning into the Psychedelic Podcast. I'm your host, Tina Marie, here with Chris, aka Cappy, Shaman Don, and Rob, my husband. A very flattering title. How's everybody doing today?
Doing good. How's everything in Texas?
It's actually getting not so hot, so I'm really excited about that.
It's cold and I'm scared of cults.
Dawn, how's that belly?
Oh, this baby never stops moving, and he makes me tired, and he makes me eat everything, so yeah.
So you have a cult-like craving for chocolate?
It's definitely ungodly.
A bloodthirst for chocolate.
Oh, God. Yeah. I did get a bag of Twix.
Oh, gosh.
If you missed that reference, you have to check out our episode on Help Me Out Here.
Superpowers and Tiggle Bitties.
Tiggle Bitties.
Don, when you said bag of Twix, you poomphed into the mic a lot.
Okay.
All right. Here are the top three reasons that people want to join cults. This is from insider.com, which I don't fully trust. I just want to see what your take on this is. One of them is they want to better themselves, either professionally or personally. They want a greater sense of community, or they're in a state of extreme vulnerability. That one makes complete sense to me. What do y'all think about that?
Oh, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. A lot of people want that sense of community, at least as far as the People's Temple went. They were all very devout, but they also wanted that sense of community and togetherness.
Yeah, and they wanted to try to save the world, and a lot of women were a part of that cult as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Do you guys think they actually believe in these things or just want to be a part of a group because they feel lonely and not independent thinkers?
It's mostly comprised of followers for sure. The overarching thing here is the vulnerability, being gullible aspect of it, where they may be seeking growth and they may be seeking better opportunities, but they follow the crowd and they need desperately to belong. And I think they're seeking validation. So they're not strong people who think for themselves or questioning things. They want to have somebody else tell them what to believe and what to do and who to be.
Right, exactly. Cappy, tell us a little bit about the People's Temple.
Well, the People's Temple was founded by Jim Jones. Most people know him as the Kool-Aid Man. He's not Kool-Aid Man. He's the Flavor-Aid Man. Essentially, he used religion very similar to like Tony and Susan Alamo. Actually, a lot of cults are religious founded, but he opened up the temple and eventually led everyone to Guyana, where that incident happened. By incident, I mean the mass murder he committed.
Yes, and there was a lot of children involved in that too. It was a really, really sad thing. Cults are actually quite sad in so many different ways. I mean, we have a lot of modern day cults going on right now, and people don't consider them cults, but I'm not going to name any of them because canceled.
We don't want to do that.
Most cults amass a lot of money, but Jim Jones had a lot of money. Still, he decided to skimp on the good drink and got the Flavor-Aid.
Well, he had to put it all towards those dumb glasses that he had.
You know the point of those glasses. It wasn't just to look cool, though.
Is it because he was high?
He was on so many drugs. I mean, he was on speed and all kinds of things, and his eyes were so messed up, he wore the glasses to hide the fact that he's not a god.
Yeah, and they were kind of a yellowish tint, which is interesting to me because they have that saying about rose-colored glasses, but his were like a crappy yellow rose-tinted glasses.
Piss-colored glasses.
I know, I should not be laughing at that, but that is actually funny. What do you think about this term? This is one of the psychological reasons that people get lured into cults, the seductive recruitment process.
That's like a classic narcissist. These people are manipulative, seductive. They can sell something very easily to people who are very gullible, and they have a way of finding these people and attracting them. I wish I could have had a little bit more of that when I was in car sales. I probably would have done better.
Would you guys consider that our podcast is a cult? I'm just kidding.
Absolutely not.
So
I have been threatened multiple times if I leave, what'll happen to me? I don't know.
To go off of what y'all were just talking about, I think a lot of times people are under the impression that they can just try it out real quick. But once they're in it forever.
Well, not all of them. There's a lot of people that are fortunate to get out of them. And there are actually several websites and organizations that have been put together to help these people with the trauma that they've gotten from being in the cult.
Yeah, what I thought was crazy in my research was that the most loyal members, who are called the true believers, they feel that there exists no life outside of the group. There's no other way to be or to exist. There's no other choice. These members, a lot of the time, will be in fear that if they ever leave or even consider leaving the cult, they'll want to enact vengeance on themselves. So that's how brainwashed some of these people can be by these cults.
Can you correlate that with any cults that you know of?
Two things. One, the term that I think y'all were wanting to get at was flirty fishing, and that's something that
flirty fishing.
Well, what is that?
Flirty fishing was done by the Family International under David Berg. That was the Children of God cult. They'd get the prettier members go out and get men to come and join the cult by flirting with them, because guys are easily manipulated.
There was this whole other kind of free love layer to it, where you were initiated into the cult through sex with these flirty fishers. A lot of young women ended up in those cults through that.
Wow.
Do you guys think that sexual exploration was a big part of a lot of these cults? And also, do y'all think that the main goal is to recruit new members and make some moolah?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of these people were told, like Tony and Susan Alamo, Jim Jones, David Berg, these people banked on Christianity because they knew that their members, even if they were poor, they would sell everything they had to give to the church, because they believed these people were maybe not the mouthpieces of God, but they were like God adjacent.
Prophets.
Yes, prophets. That's the word I was looking for. Susan Alamo, which I'm sure we'll get into later, she was a con woman, and so was her husband, Tony, which he took her name, by the way. But her whole thing was to con people, and they just wanted money. So they just banked off the Christianity angle because it was an angle. It was something they could work. She would say, oh, yeah, I talk to God. God and I are buddies. Tony, when Susan died, he just said, oh, I don't talk to God. I talk to Susan, who still was buddies with God. So that's where I'm getting all my information from.
Right. I read that after a cult has successfully thrown your old life away and replaced it with a new one, they start reshaping your entire identity, and they break down the conception of yourself as a person and replace it. Yeah, they replace it with the group. And so like with the People's Temple, it was discussed a lot at San Diego State University with Jim Jones and his psychological revolution. There was an article that read, the cost for Jones' followers was to further lose their independence of thought and opinion. So the cult's identity consumes your own, and then there becomes no difference between you and everybody else.
Part of it is to rename you. If you get a new name and you get a new location, you're no longer Chris, Tina, Rob, or Don. You're whoever the leader decides you are. Mm. And then it's similar to acting in a role. You got a new life. You're Bob.
I would be highly upset if they renamed me Bob.
That's Rob spelled backwards.
Boar.
Yeah.
So I'm Annette. You're
Trevor.
Don, how would we pronounce that?
Nuad.
That works. We're getting new names. This is a cult.
Instead of Cappy, Epoch.
Perfect.
I want to go back to this idea of sexual exploitation being one of the key factors that we see in so many of these cults. I'd say the majority of them, minus Hare Krishna, which decided to go the opposite route and say sex was only for reproductive purposes. But if you look at all of the popular cults that we talk about today, these really extreme ones, they seem to have come about around the 60s and 70s, when we as a culture were shifting towards sexual liberation and exploration, like Rob was saying. In a sense, you have this idea that as a culture, we want to explore and we want to do things differently from the way that the generation before did, yet we're also defying the church in doing so. These cults come in at this time and they say, hey, look, we can still be kind of like Christianity, but you can have all the sex you want and it's totally right. fine. You're still definitely going to heaven, and we're going to get you there on a fast track. So you can see how that would be really appealing to young adults who are searching for identity as a whole, as a people.
I just wanted to point out that when you said culture, realize it has the word cult in it.
Yeah, it does.
I didn't even realize that.
I just now noticed that. Very interesting.
That's so deep, Tina.
That's crazy. A theme in these cults is that the end always justifies what they're doing along totally. The way. Lying to family, creating new identities, cheating, stealing, killing. Nothing is off the table.
If it's deferred, like the cult leader's goal, absolutely. I mean, they don't care.
Apparently, another way that a cult tricks people into believing is they portray themselves as the best solution to whatever problem somebody might be dealing with. Going back to the vulnerability of people and how they are so easily exploited and drawn into these cults, there's a formula like this person or this has hurt you. We as a cult can make X go away and make you feel better. Okay, so you're heartbroken and your wife or husband just left you. Now you're in a cult. You're in a weird sex cult and you can go have sex with whoever you want and make the pain go away, basically. Love bombing.
Jim Jones was like an incredible person. He ran soup kitchens. When he founded the temple in the, I think it was 1950s, segregation was still very rampant. And he would fill businesses with people. He turned the lights back on for people. He did a lot for the African-American community. He went as far as to adopt a child.
Did Jim Jones have a lot of African-American followers?
Yes. He opened in primarily African-American community and attracted a lot of people. And he actually followed through. Like, he wasn't just talk. He would say, "What's troubling you?" And they'd be like, "My power got cut off." And he'd go march down there and get the power turned back on for him. His angle wasn't sexual. It was, "I'm going to help y'all." I mean, he went into it for money. Actions speak louder than words in a lot of ways. If my power is cut off and some guy says, "I'm going to go get that turned back on for you," and it happens, I'm more inclined to follow them just because they're actually doing it. They're not talking. They're not like, "Okay, well, bow your heads and pray that this works out for you." No, they went and got results.
Right.
That's seductive to me. It's like, hey, you're actually doing something. You're helping me out at a physical, tangible level.
Do you think that this guy was buying their love with these actions? Or do you think he was inherently a good guy, but it got to his head and just kind of went out of control?
Personally, I don't think he was ever a good guy. I think he always had an ulterior motive. I think he knew this is going to be the easiest way to get into their pockets. What's that old saying? You know, you got to spend money to make money. I think
that's which one? There's so many.
If you can get into their pants, you can get into their pockets.
Oh, hey. That makes sense.
It did make sense.
Tina is the true cult leader here.
This is my audition tape.
All of us are still here after how many months, so maybe.
Yeah. We've sold our identities. We've changed our names.
Let me get your brains back on track here. So another way that a cult can trick somebody into believing is that ultimately they sell a person on the idea of being a part of a cult, that they've been uniquely chosen. A lot of cult leaders will attack people in that way. Like, you're unique. You're an individual. Like, you're independent. We can get you out of this. You don't need to go to school. What is school? Like, you can just come live and free range on whatever ranch in the middle of nowhere with us, right?
You can be a free range chicken.
This is Tina's invitation for us, guys.
Join the podcast, be a free range chicken.
You come live in the trailer.
Join our cult.
So it's not only being loved and accepted that attracts people to a lot of cults. It's that they feel as if they're being recognized as special or important.
Yeah. I feel like at the same time, though, the leader is considered to be like a messiah or some special being.
That's mostly the case.
Sent by whoever the hell they want to make up to save humanity, basically.
That's mostly the case. I tried to find statistics on cults. I don't know if you guys did, but I didn't really find much. And I was looking for cults of 2020, and all I saw was QAnon. I don't really know how to pronounce it.
QAnon?
Someone said Kanon, but I don't think that's right.
That is not right.
I can understand that, because normally you don't just pronounce the whole Q.
I was going to say, I actually attended a cult meeting one time.
Yay.
I attended a satanic cult mass in Detroit. It was actually the night before Halloween, during the full moon. Everything that you're saying is true. I mean, these people were, they were the kind of people that you knew didn't fit in anywhere. Some of them were trans. Some of them were just very socially awkward. I mean, you name it. They were all very different. They clearly didn't fit in anywhere except for there. The way that they followed their leader, they were like puppies. So the reason I was there was because I was giving free readings for the night, and I gave him a reading. At the time, the kind of readings that I was doing, I was actually doing an energy reading and painting what I was seeing while the person was with me in the room. His painting was very interesting. I won't go into that much, but things had just really gone to his head, and he was convinced that he was going to be the best person to lead these people. And I don't think he set out with the intention of creating a cult until it started to happen. Right. He had studied all these different religions. He had multiple bachelor's and master's degrees. He had been to various churches and led various churches, and ultimately kept gravitating back to Satanism and formed his own cult.
For the audience, Dawn, you didn't go to this satanic cult with the idea of wanting to join. You went there on your own terms.
Or did you know, even?
Yeah, I knew. I attended as a spectator. I was curious, and I was like, when would I ever get the chance again? Most people were chickening out, and the staff was sort of on the edge, I would say, where some of them were either going to join or were thinking of joining something similar, or the others were just curious. A lot of people left. There was like a before party where everyone would kind of gather and mingle and have snacks and get readings from me. And
what
then
kind of snacks?
Just like pretzels and nothing cool.
Oh, that sucks.
Just chips, you know.
I thought you were going to be like a big bowl of bloody Jello.
Just a variety pack of Fritos and Doritos.
The blood came later. There was fake blood.
Really quickly, I wanted to give a shout out to our broadcasting network. That is 365 Broadcasting. A big thank you to our sponsor, Artie Hoffman. Dawn's been talking about readings. Get your reading from Artie Hoffman or Dawn. Go to artiehoffman.com.
Our Audible is www.audibletrials.com/psychedelic. And that gets you your first month free and one free audiobook.
Okay, so that was really interesting about satanic cults. I mean, there's a lot of those. Do you guys know of any really famous satanic cults?
The government?
Dang.
I don't know of any satanic ones. Well, they can all pretty much fall under that category, but there's one that's called Raelism. I don't know if you guys have heard of that.
I have not.
Yeah.
Have you heard of Elohim?
Oh!
He's...
Yes.
Elohim is, in the Hebrew Bible, God. In this cult, they refer to Elohim as the leader of a race of aliens. And the other aliens are fallen angels. Pretty much just a UFO belief-based religion. Their views are kind of liberal, and they advocate for world peace and daily meditation and sexual experimentation. They're also really big on cloning, which they believe can lead to their immortality, which will make Elohim want to come back really badly. It was founded by a French race car driver named Claude Vorilhon. Sounds evil. In 1974, and he was the founder because he said that he met Elohim and the other aliens. In the 90s, they formed their own cloning company and claimed to have cloned their first cult member in 2000. That's why it's called Raelism, because Israelism.
Yeah.
It's just like without the is. They're still going strong today. They have tens of thousands of members, and they're all just still awaiting the return of Elohim.
That sounds an awful lot like this Italian race car driver who claimed to have met with aliens in the desert somewhere, or somewhere on a hillside or something. And he wrote a book about the true meaning of the Bible. It was basically a transcript given to him by these aliens.
Wow. So I have a friend named Christopher Stoley who has something called Realm of the Mist Entertainment. And I met him in the other network that I'm a part of, which is the SJ Network. And He just came out with an episode called E.T. Has a B-O-N-E-R. I'm not going to say the word. But he was telling me about how some people have this weird affinity to want to be impregnated by aliens. And what Rob was just reading about with the sexual experimentation and stuff that they do in that cult made me think of that. That's like an entire fetish, apparently, that people
want to be
impregnated by an alien. I wonder if they did that kind of stuff in that cult that he was talking about.
Mm, very
it's
desirable.
So hot. Aliens are hot. Why would you not want that?
God. Why do you think that women are more likely to join cults?
Feminine energy is receptive and wants to belong to a group. Women tend to try to find a safe collective where they can be heard and be recognized. I mean, if you think about it, our biological trait is to have babies and raise them. So obviously we want to be belonging to someplace that feels safe so we can do that inherently. That's what our DNA is driving us to do. Listeners may not agree, but that's biology.
I feel like women are more likely to join on a different basis. I think it's because, like we've spoken about in quite a few episodes, that women tend to be more empathetic. So we feel things on a different level than a lot of men do, and that's part of our brain chemistry. That being said, if we're feeling really hurt and lost and low self-esteem and wanting someone to take care of us, or we're fed up with society, those are some psychological reasons of why a woman might join a cult, in my opinion.
Right, because we're always reaching for that safe place to belong to.
Right. So I guess I did sort of agree with you there.
You did.
Tina and I have a very interesting relationship. We're going to be soul married.
Yes, we're going to be spiritually intertwined.
Are you sure you want to spend the rest of eternity with Don's soul?
Don has a beautiful soul.
Thank you, Tina.
I am not weighing in on that one.
Come on, Cappy.
Speaking on marriages and cults, I think it was the Family International, or that's what they call now, the Children of God cult. David Berg just used to walk up to married couples and be like, Rob, you're now married to Dawn, and Tina, you're one of his new wives. And he would just do that. He would just spot whoever and just be like, yeah, you're my wife now, and I'm gonna give you Betty.
Oh, you could take Betty. Just
Betty
Boop. Take her.
David Berkowitz.
Okay, that one works too. He would just remarry at will anybody who he felt he wanted to basically have sex with. He would just be like, okay, I'm taking you and you get this person. And he would do that a lot too for his upper echelon too. Be like, okay, who do you want? Who do you find attractive? And I'm just going to marry you to them.
Yeah, so marriage was not a sacred thing in that cult then. I wonder what kind of initiation they had for their marriages. Do you know anything about that?
As far as I know, you were still legally married to whoever you were married with. He just spiritually was separating them. That's what he was saying, of course, was that he was removing their vows and remarrying them to somebody else. But, I mean, you would go into the cult married, and you might not stay married for much longer in the eyes of David, anyways.
I wonder if the people that were in their new marriages still had a connection with their original partners after they were assigned a new one.
They weren't allowed to. If I remember correctly, they weren't even allowed to have sex with their partner.
Oh, that's so sad.
Only the leader can dictate that.
Oh my goodness.
You knew this was going to happen. This was a possibility.
I've thought it in my head many times.
You guys have filled my head with innuendo. So the leader definitely dictates extensively how the members should think, act, and feel. You need permission on who you date, who you marry, if you change jobs. They tell you what to wear. They tell you where you can live, if you can have children, and all things of that nature are always decided for them.
So these are people that are reaching out for a leader. They need someone to tell them what to do because they don't have the self-worth to be their own authority in their life.
Right. And no matter how anyone portrays themselves, all humans have vulnerabilities or weaknesses. Being able to identify and tap into those aspects of your character is always, for the most part of the cult leader scheme. So
And then that vulnerability is taken advantage of. Most of the cults do mind-altering practices like meditation, like rigorous work routine. Yeah, rigorous work routines to wear you out, to make you more susceptible to being mind-controlled, basically. Speaking in tongues and chanting and stuff like that in excess so that silences any doubt about the leader's credibility and the credibility of the cult that you may have.
Tony and Susan Alamo, or the Alamo Christian Foundation, you would be working, I think, like 13, 14-hour days, sleeping for very little. You wouldn't draw a paycheck because that check was going back to the foundation, but you were working, kids were working. A while back, I shared in the group a picture of some boots. Those boots were created by children in basically a sweat factory.
Aww.
Everybody worked. It didn't matter.
I didn't realize those were the boots that you had posted. Those were those cool, like, cowboy-looking boots?
Yes.
Damn, I just thought those were boots that you were interested in buying for some reason.
Me too! I saw
them. Now y'all know why.
Did you really want to buy them? Like, are you still interested?
I'm very interested in cult memorabilia. It's a very interesting artifact.
You are the macabre guy.
King Macabre over here.
Macabre. Oh my goodness. Okay, so Cappy's now King Macabre. Got it.
All the other conditions they were in, so in most situations, they were sleeping on the ground. You only spoke to other cult members. You didn't speak to your family very often or at all. Eventually, that was completely severed, just like all cults do.
Mm-hmm.
They sever all outside contact. Anybody, including Susan's daughter, who did successfully leave the cult after a number of years, she actually was assaulted by Tony as well. She was beaten up by her mother and other cultists for trying to leave.
Wow.
The police didn't do nothing.
Wow, that's awful.
You get put into these situations where you think this is the right path to go because God is telling you this. Not God, but Susan, who's speaking to you.
I think it's weird how... I mean, the leaders condition the members to think that they're above the law, but it actually does kind of seem that way. It's like, how do they not get discovered and they can lead this cult for 30 years and tens of thousands of people go missing or just ghost their families and somebody has a tens of thousands of membered community out in the freaking woods somewhere? You know, we got choppers and airplanes. Yeah. How do they not see this happening? It's kind of like they turn a blind eye to it.
Yeah, be right back. I'm going to go cult with my friends in the woods.
Susan's daughter was so afraid after she got full custody of her children. She moved multiple times because her mother basically vowed vengeance on her for leaving the cult. Fear has such a powerful way of keeping you in the cult and keeping you mobile after the cult.
Definitely, I would be scared to confront a cult if a family member of mine was indoctrinated.
One of the cultists, I guess he reached out to his dad or something along those lines. He spoke to his dad, and his family came in essentially. No, no, it wasn't essentially. They kidnapped him and eventually got his brain fixed because he wouldn't go willingly.
Wow. Good for them.
I got me a fun cult. Not really. So... Hono Hana Sanpogo, he created the foot reading cult.
Wow.
I'm sorry. This was known as the foot reading cult. I thought that was his name for a second. That's the name of the cult. But its founder, Hojin Fukunaga.
That's Japanese.
It's Japanese. He claimed he was the reincarnation of Jesus and Buddha.
That's
very bold.
A splice.
A splice, yep. He claimed that he could tell a person's fortune by looking at their feet.
That makes sense, actually.
I don't know. I don't know how that makes sense, but it was exposed as being a money-making scam in 87 after Hojin. He began charging $900 per foot reading.
Is he still around for foot readings?
He spent 12 years in jail, so he's out by now. So he gained over 30,000 members. His most loyal members use intimidation tactics to force people to attend his seminars, which were very expensive, $22,000 every 5 days. He tricked them into buying stupid little trinkets that he said would keep them safe from evil.
Okay.
But it wasn't keeping them safe from him.
Wait, what did he do that was so bad other than read feet?
Like I said, like the most prominent members were just like bullies, and they would force these people to spend their money on these seminars and stuff, and they were basically held against their will. This D-bag wore $5,000 custom suits, and again, this was in the 80s, so that's a lot. Those are some expensive suits. He was also friends with Bill Clinton and Margaret Thatcher.
That's an interesting one. I'm going to have to look into him. I mean, we have palmistry, and now I've learned that we can read feet. Dawn, we're going to have to try that out.
Footistry.
When Dawn comes back, her internet crashed.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
Well, Cappy, I guess we're all getting into foot reading together.
An interesting thing. You mentioned Bill Clinton. When Tony and Susan opened up a cafe, they actually had live singing. And who else but Dolly Parton sang at one of the bashes they had. And Bill Clinton and Hillary were in attendance for this.
I think the Clintons probably at least once attended a meeting or a convention at every evil cult that they possibly could.
Probably.
I bet a lot of money on that.
I feel like there's so many cults that we don't know about that actually exist. Dawn, there you are. Okay.
Sorry.
Chris was just saying that there was a really big bash, and we don't have to revisit it, but I just really quickly wanted to say that, Dawn, we're going to have to get into foot reading.
Oh, yeah. Did you hear my foot reading cult?
No.
Ah, damn it.
It dropped right after foot reading cult.
Damn.
That's okay. I already set it in stone that we're going to start a foot reading session.
I also wanted to put in, you mentioned wearing like a $5,000 suit. A lot of cult leaders wore those kinds of suits, and that's actually a brainwashing rewire that people would use. The whole process of rewiring somebody is to ask them, like, why are you sleeping in the dirt and he's sleeping in a mansion? So these questions were asked to cult members to try to get them to think for themselves, to get out of their brainwashing, to realize, like, why am I sleeping in the dirt wearing the same clothes for 3 weeks? This guy has 60 suits.
Reverse brainwash technique. Mm-hmm. Never heard of that.
The whole thing to fix somebody's brain is to get them critically thinking about their situation.
Right.
In the satanic cult that I observed, their leader was not lavishly dressed. He was just wearing a plain black trench coat looking thing. In general, nobody was wearing anything special or had any special requests being made of them. They were very come as you are. I mean, it was a satanic cult, so there was kind of a gothic vibe to it. Everyone was kind of following that trend a little bit, but there wasn't anything like that. But I did hear about one, I forget which one it was, where the guy would drive around the compound in like Rolls Royces and stuff.
I'm going to mention an interesting person who actually escaped the Children of God cult. We are aware that, what's his name? Joaquin Phoenix. And, you know, obviously things worked out pretty well for at least Joaquin. He and his brother, what's his name? River Phoenix? They were both members of the Children of God cult, and they were able to get out of it. I don't think Joaquin was very old when they got out of the cult, but he was a member of it.
Hang on, though. Think about that movie that Joaquin Phoenix was in, The Village. It's an M. Night Shyamalan movie, and in the movie, they are living in a closed society, and they're not aware of the world around them. They don't know what's outside of the world around them, and they've been warned that if they go out, they will get hurt by these monsters. And so they stay in this compound their whole lives until the girl leaves and realizes it's all a trick and there's this whole other world.
Oh, I love that movie. We watched that. What was it called, Rob?
The Village.
Oh, I'm thinking of another movie. The two brothers that go into that.
Oh, yeah. They get stuck in a time warp. A time loop.
Yeah. So they are part of a cult. And gosh, you guys, I really wish I remembered the name of the movie.
The Village, I didn't realize that's what it was about because I was so young. I was too young to comprehend that. I just thought it was a scary movie.
I don't know that that's what it was about per se, but knowing that Joaquin Phoenix himself came out of a cult and then was portrayed in a movie that sort of depicts something very similar.
That's really good philosophy on that.
Definitely has greater meanings, I believe. That's probably one of the themes of
the movie.
I think
that's a really good theory, Dawn.
Thank you.
Yeah. What? Why are you laughing?
Because it was a lag when I said thank you, because I'm really bad at taking compliments.
Dawn, I love you. You're beautiful, and I love your stomach because it's got a baby in it, and you're just like the best person ever, and you're so talented.
I'm hiding underneath the desk right now.
Cappy, I think you're the king of Macabre, and I think you're amazing, and you're the most humble, genuine person I've ever met.
King Mac?
Until we get into Cappy, the Macabre.
Cappy's not saying anything.
See, well, he gets it.
I was trying to wait for a pause, like Dawn, but I wasn't sure how long I should wait to say anything.
Probably like 8 cackles later.
Oh. Thank you.
Oh, there we go.
I counted about 4 or 5 cackles.
You just gotta cut off the end of people's sentences.
I snort too, and Rob hates it.
She actually was sober from snorting for like 7 months.
You cannot say sober and associate that with snorting during laughter.
Yes, you can. A lot of people snort drugs.
That is hilarious. I think that was brilliant. He's so quick with it.
Quick-witted.
Oh, quick-witted. Wow. Witted.
Quick pan.
Whoa. Quick pan.
Quick pan. Thank God we're not live. Thank God we're not live.
It's going to all turn out good. I mean, there is a lot of good information here. You guys went on some really good monologues, so.
It's going to be juicy.
About 10 minutes.
Yeah,
of it.
No, this is going to be about 30, 40 minutes. So how did Tony and Susan meet? Like, who was the real beginner of that cult?
They both were. They were both con people. Susan, like, would con and then get drunk. They would go to churches and be like, my daughter has been healed. And they would basically work the crowd. Tony was also a con man in his own right, but not as good as Susan. Susan could sell ice to an Eskimo.
Was Susan hot?
That I don't know. Google image it.
I will.
Was Tony as cunning as Tony Stewart?
Robert.
No, he ran somebody over with his race car and got away with it. On live TV.
Okay, that's not related.
Even when Tony took over the cult from Susan because she passed away, Susan was receiving words from God. He was telling her everything. When she died, he said, I'm receiving messages from Susan, who's receiving them from God. So he still was saying, Susan is in charge. I'm just getting her words.
He couldn't let go of that cult.
Matriarchy.
Okay, so Susan's dead at this point. He had a 24-hour prayer circle around her, trying to bring her back from the dead. Even after she started to
purify. Now I can't say the word.
After she got all gross and stuff.
After she turned green and oozy goozy.
Putrid.
Guys, that's really sad.
Putrid. Yeah, that's actually quite sad. Yeah.
Don't get too sad for him, because he started having sex with children.
Don't feel bad. Thank you, Chris.
I was never sad.
Our empathy just went out the window.
Don't cry for this guy. He's a sick puppy.
Oh, goodness. Hashtag sick puppy. Your favorite panel of non-experts here, just delivering you a bunch of craziness along with home today.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Clearly don't know.
No, us anyways.
Clearly, Dawn is pregnant. Cappy had a lot of information on Susan and Tony, and Rob
don't know anything.
I just got big eyebrows. That's what I'm here for.
Look out for our 7 days of Halloween, and it's all going to be every single day of the week of Halloween. We're going to have a creepy episode, so thank you so much to 365 Broadcasting, and also a very big thank you to our publicist, Stephen Joyner. He's with the s-j-network.com.
Thank you, Audible, for sponsoring this episode. You can get a free month and a free credit by going to www.audibletrial.com/psychedelic. You can use that free credit to get anything in the store. They also have spoken words, comedy, stand-up, and a bit of everything. Once again, you can get that free month and free credit by going to www.audibletrial.com/psychedelic or click the link in the show notes.
Big shout out to our sponsor, Artie Hoffman of Angels and Answers. He's a psychic medium and a book author at www.artiehoffman.com.
Become a patron on our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/psychedelicpodcast. No hyphen there.
Dawn out.
Chris out.
All right, guys.
Rob out.